this life has brought you a series of taped lectures by one of today's leading theologians, Father John A. Hardin, S.J. Some of these taped lectures have proved difficult to understand because of surface or tape noise or because of some sort of outside interference. The problem of hearing and understanding is further accentuated when some of the users attempted to play the tapes on loudspeaker systems for the benefit of their communities. For this reason, it has been necessary to retape certain of these lectures in order to ensure or assure clarity of voice and content. In such cases, we have had to resort to a substitute voice, but we assure you that the words spoken and the ideas presented are those of Father John A. Hardin, with nothing added and nothing subtracted. The substitute voice is that of one Robert Warnock. The current lecture is on the importance of humility as the foundation of religious life. First, some general observations. Humility is absolutely necessary. I believe that among the factors that have contributed to the problem through which religious life is going in our age is right here. I think there has not been enough concern to make sure that those who are accepted are humble, or at least willing to become humble. However, we should not jump to the conclusion that because a person seems to be haughty, seems to be supercilious, seems to have raised eyebrows or walks in a certain way, head erect and chest out, and seems to own the world, that he or she is not humble. Some people's bodily contour makes their center of gravity such that the only way they could walk is in a certain way to maintain posture. So not everybody who seems to be proud is, and not everybody who seems to be humble is. Moreover, in cultivating humility, make sure it is interior humility, and that means mainly and fundamentally one's attitude toward God. In theology, we distinguish between religious humility and moral humility. Religious humility is that virtue which recognizes my position with respect to God, that compared with Him, I am nothing, that He has total rights over me, and I behave accordingly. Moral humility is rather recognizing one's true relationship with others. And that's different. Between these two kinds of humility, religious humility is basic. Unless that is cultivated, moral humility can be developed for many other reasons than the primary one, mainly that it's pleasing to God. Humility is absolutely necessary not only for the religious life, but in fact for the spiritual life. Theologians do not commonly speak of humility as a distinct virtue. They rather identify it as the foundation for all virtue. In dealing with others, I think the first thing, the most important thing, the important question is to be sure. Is the person that you want to cultivate humility, does that person really lack humility? Because what may seem to be a lack of humility may be many other things. For some people seem to be proud, but are not. Some people seem to be humble, but are not. I doubt if any virtue is more difficult with certainty to identify than humility. Even, in fact, to the person who reflects on his or herself. Having said that, when we speak of the importance of humility, we are mainly talking about the interior humility, which frankly means two things. It means humility, which is mainly a posture of the spirit rather than external deportment or conduct. So, interior first, in the sense of its being a disposition of the will and the mind. But secondly, it is further to be interior humility, not only to distinguish it from external deportment and humble conduct, it is also mainly to be humility with respect to God. In other words, the fundamental humility to try to cultivate in others is a humble attitude towards God, which may or may not show itself in humble relationships with others. Though I would have to say that where there is genuine interior humility, twice over, in other words, interior humility of spirit, and secondly, that it is interior because it is related to God, external practices of humility will also follow. Also, what I might call moral humility, humility in one's conduct, will also follow. At any rate, the stress should be on the interior disposition of the mind and the will, recognizing its special helplessness and dependence on God. We now ask ourselves, why is humility so basic, especially in the religious life? The first reason is, I suggest, because a genuine religious vocation presumes a capacity for humility. Now, that doesn't mean necessarily that those who enter religious life are already as humble as they should be. Notice, I said, a religious vocation presumes a capacity for humility. The reason is because even as pride is the source of all evil, so humility is the source of all virtue. If then a religious is to cultivate the virtues that the church expects of her religious, that person had better be humble. Otherwise, either the person will not receive the grace, because we are told by Revelation that God gives his grace to the humble, or secondly, though having received the grace, unless the person is humble, he or she will not cooperate with the grace. So what are the two basic reasons why humility is so indispensable as the foundation of the religious life? They are because unless a person is humble, they just won't get the grace. Or as I tell people, there is no way I can tell whether you have a religious vocation. Show me a little humility, and then I can begin to speak a little more confidently that maybe you have a vocation. The two reasons are because either the person will not receive the grace, and without grace, there is no vocation. That's what a vocation is. It's a lifetime of special graces. Or secondly, though the person may, though not humble, receive grace, it will be wasted on the individual because he will not cooperate if the person is not humble with the grace received. Now, to recognize a humble person, or how to work on a proud person to get him to be more humble, I have outlined 7 qualities of a humble person. 1, a humble person prays. It's that simple, and it's that important. If it's me, work on self. If it's another, work on him or her. The most basic posture of humility in spirit is the recognition of one's complete and total and constant dependence on God, which is another way of putting it, that the person prays. The person is not humble, says she does not pray. Well, get her to pray. But she doesn't want to. That has nothing to do with it. She doesn't feel like praying. So what? Pray and then hope that God will give some humility to the person. Now, number two, a humble person is aware of his sinfulness. All I know as a priest, you want to give a person counsel, and they proceed for the first 30 minutes with what's good with them, and if I need any guidance, they are ready to give it to me. So a person who is humble is aware of being a sinner. This is not make-believe. If we have any doubt about the saints' humility, read what they say about themselves as sinners. Woe is me! Woe is me! St. Francis of Assisi considered himself the world's worst sinner. St. Paul, a terrible sinner. St. Ignatius, well, he wondered on one dramatic occasion why the destructive creatures in the world didn't destroy him. Why doesn't God use the forces of nature to destroy this scum of the earth, this rot? His Spanish vocabulary was not big, but he exhausted it in describing himself as a sinner. Now, those are the sinners who were saints. A humble person is painfully aware. In fact, I would also describe growing in humility as a growing realization. I'm supposed to be getting holier. Well, one way that you show that you are growing in humility and sanctity is your growing awareness of your sinfulness. And this is not make-believe. A humble person, number three, a humble person sees the need for guidance. That doesn't mean that the humble person will not be prudent. You don't go around collaring people saying, help me, I need guidance. You make sure that the guide deserves respect and trust. But humble people are not merely willing to be guided. They don't just recognize that they should be guided. They look for guidance, of course, from the right people. That, too, is a way of both recognizing humility in people, including ourselves, and of helping the person grow in humility to become more open to guidance. Number four, a humble person is open to grace. That means two things. We commonly take it as openness of the will, and so it is. But it is a wide awakeness of mind. A humble person recognizes grace when he sees it, and he recognizes it as an invitation, an opportunity, as a privilege. Something terrible happens. Plans go awry. Things I've undertaken fail. That's a grace in big red neon signs. Grace. So a person recognizes grace when it's there, and an openness of will in responding to it. Humanly speaking, grace often demanding sacrifice, we begin to rationalize. why, that grace is for somebody else, not for me, or why I shouldn't do it, or why I should postpone it. I tell people, look, remember, actual grace is for the moment. You can't tell the Lord, now, Lord, that's a real nice grace. Could you come back tomorrow? Odds are he won't. Number five, a humble person will be patient, kind, and grateful. I put those three together because I think they belong together. To grow in humility, we must grow in patience, which means in the capacity for bearing pain. And that means, in St. Paul's phrase, in putting up with one another. Most pains in our lives are people, if your lives are anything like mine. Secondly, a humble person is kind, which means in thoughtfulness. Certain things you don't say or don't do because people will be offended. As a teacher, you can't imagine how much I've learned about kindness. I don't push people when they don't want to identify themselves for having made a mistake. Thirdly, humble people are grateful. You know them because any favor you do them, they know they don't deserve it. In my estimation, lack of gratitude is just a species of pride. You go out of your way, all sorts of sacrifices for another, and you are lucky to get a smile in return. You know why? You owe the deed to them. Humility is patient, kind, and grateful. Number six, humble people make good members of a community. A humble person fits in, belongs, gets along with people, with all kinds of people. And the bigger the community, the more kinds of people. And by now, as we know, there can be some very strange characters in religious communities. And among them, the strangest is ourselves. A humble person fits in. It takes a minimal adjustment to get along. Number seven, a humble person will be trusted by God. Now that's an odd one, huh? Trusted by God. We have enough passages in both the Old and the New Testament about God being jealous, about God not wanting, because he cannot, as God, share his glory with anyone else. A humble person does not take credit for what God has done in his life. And the net result is that God will use a humble person to do all kinds of wonderful things with that individual. He will put him on one pedestal after another, and God feels safe. I've met great people in my life, and they were all profoundly, breathlessly humble and oblivious of their own greatness. God uses them. There are three things regarding this being trusted by God. A, interiorly, a person like this honestly does not give himself credit for the good things that he does. And you keep your mind off your achievements. You really do. And it's like 16 or 18 inches of snow. It keeps coming down. You shovel it away. It keeps coming. The thoughts keep crowding in your mind. I'm pretty good. And you shovel it away again. And you've got to keep working at it. It's a lifetime task. Without that, nothing really happens. B, in dealing with others, the person never says or does anything that will draw attention or praise. Now, I check myself and fault myself on this too often not to know. This is a small example. Maybe just gently dropping the hint of a name of some person that might make me feel better because I know that person. No, it's never seeking praise. And see, when you get praise, as quickly as possible, get rid of it, get it off your mind. Don't dwell on the praise, and of course, don't seek it, and don't act on it. I have no hesitation in saying that human praise is the poison of the spiritual life. Poison. It's venomous. There will be a certain amount of this in our lives. There has to be. People are kind and understanding. They want to be charitable. God bless them. But it's still poison. Because so many people live their lives depending on acceptance and rejection. And they measure their love for others by the way people act to them. Now, one further word on humility. Humility is that attitude of soul which recognizes its nothingness before God. And before God, that's exactly what we are. We define creation as God making whatever he makes out of nothing. So that, theologically speaking, if the essence of God is existence, God is that being who cannot not exist. He must exist. The essence of creatures is non-existence. That's our nature. And except for the creative will of God that brought us into being and the sustaining creative will of God keeping us in being, we would be what we are by essence, nothing. Humility is that attitude of soul which keeps recognizing this and acting accordingly. As I've told you so many times before, our elevator on Park Avenue, it moves so slow, and I'm in a hurry. So I pray, or else I'll get sore at the elevator, or my superior who doesn't do something about it. After all, it was installed in 1906. Because I am nothing, I don't get impatient with God. He has a right to put people in my life that I don't appreciate or not let something go the way I want it to. Last week, I had a meeting in Youngstown, and I was flying there from Pittsburgh. I had to be on time. So what happens? The plane is 40 minutes late. God always provides to keep us aware of our nothingness. And so much for humility. This concludes Father Hardin's talk on the importance of humility as the foundation of religious life. If you will run your tape out to its end, please reverse the tape, and we will have Father Hardin's lecture on the practice of constant prayer.